You're listening to Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress, voice of the resistance, and Colonel Cannabis. Hemp Rock Radio, as a member of the WEED Radio Network, serves only to air responsible, divergent points of view. Hemp Rock Radio does endorse some candidates or groups of candidates for public office. The opinions expressed during this program reflect the views and opinions of Hemp Rock Radio or the views of our guests. Hemp Rock Radio may air material that's offensive or unsuitable to some listeners. If you are one of those listeners, please tune away now, smoke a joint, and then return to Hemp Rock Radio. The following interview with Kentucky's gubernatorial candidate, Gatewood Galbraith, was recorded on 4/20/07 for Hemp Rock TV's Public Access program. Please remember that on Public Access, we cannot endorse any candidate for office. But here on Hemp Rock Radio, we can and do encourage all voters registered as Democrats in Kentucky to vote for Gatewood Galbraith this May 22nd in the Democratic primaries. And don't forget, if you live in Northern Kentucky and have Insight Cable, catch the marijuana shows on Public Access Channel 21. See the schedule for Hemp Rock TV, Kentucky Marijuana Party, and other marijuana show airtimes. For the online schedule, you can go to tbnk.org or call 859-663-7556. And if you live in Cincinnati, stay tuned because Public Access will be carrying Hemp Rock TV very soon. Remember, the following interview with Kentucky's gubernatorial candidate, Gatewood Galbraith, was recorded on 4/20 for Hemp Rock TV's Public Access. To find out more information about Gatewood, go to www.gatewood.com. Again, gatewood.com. Please enjoy the following recording with Gatewood and the Happy Hemptress, voice of the resistance. Hi, I'm the Happy Hemptress here with Hemp Rock TV, and I'm sitting here with Gatewood Galbraith. Gatewood, thanks for coming on to Hemp Rock TV.
Hey, Leanne, thank you. Or should I just call you Happy? I can call you by your first name, Happy.
Today, Anna. You can call me Happy.
All right, there you go.
Next week, it might be the pissed off Hemptress.
There you go.
Anyway, as I said, this is Hemp Rock TV, and we're going to sit here and talk to Gatewood today about not only some of his history, but what is happening today. Currently in the state of Kentucky, and what he is doing with his campaign. Tell the folks here with Hemp Rock TV, what is it that you're doing right now, and then we'll give an overview of the rest of your history.
Well, I'm currently in the governor's race. I'm in the Democratic primary for governor this May 22nd in Kentucky. I'm one of seven Democrats seeking the party's nomination on May 22nd. And of course, the winner of that primary takes on the Republican this fall. And as many of your viewers may know, I have run for political office in the past and gotten better results each time that we've run. And of course, cannabis, hemp, marijuana has been one of the prime issues with which I am associated.
Yes.
But this time, this May 22nd, we have just the most excellent opportunity for me to actually win the nomination of the Democratic Party for governor. And of course, if I get to be governor of the state of Kentucky, there'll be some terrific changes that I think a lot of our viewers would like to see happen in their own home state if they don't live in Kentucky. But the fact is that I have six opponents in this race. I need 80,000 votes to win the election. Now, I'm, of course, noted throughout the country and throughout the world as someone who would like to bring a change in the marijuana laws and a change in the hemp laws. And as many of our viewers know, we kind of candidates have had a poor time getting elected to major office. Well, this is an excellent opportunity because with so many opponents in this primary, I only need 80,000 votes to win the Democratic nomination. For those folks who may not know, I ran for Attorney General in 2003 as an independent, which is extremely difficult to do in Kentucky. I went to 12 out of 120 counties, spent $20,000, and got 110,000 votes. So I'm a proven vote getter who can possibly gain the 80,000 votes I need to win this primary. And if that happens, it's going to be bigger than Jesse Ventura. It's going to be bigger than Proposition 215 out in California, because we're going to bring some basic institutional changes to the state of Kentucky, where we're going to take the government off the backs of the people. We're going to take the government out of your backs, off your backs, out of your bladders, out of your bloodstreams, out of your billfolds, out of your back pocket, out of your internet bulletin boards, and put them back in the little box where they belong. And Kentucky's going to be a fun place to live.
Now, you did mention the 83 campaign, and then, of course, you ran for governor in 91. That's the time that I joined your campaign.
Well, now I mentioned the 2003 Attorney General's races where I got to earn 10,000 votes.
Yes.
But I did run for Commissioner of Agriculture in 1983.
Yes.
And on a totally legal marijuana platform, I was in the Democratic primary, spent $8,000 and got 14% of the vote and just freaked them all out, freaked all of America out.
Absolutely.
You know, no one had ever gotten those kind of poll results with marijuana as a lead issue. And then, of course, I ran for governor in 91 and 95 out of the Democratic primary. Mm-hmm. And the party is, of course, trying to ignore me, tried to boycott me, as they do all of us folks who want to bring about radical change. And they wouldn't invite me to any of the party functions and everything. So when the person who beat me in 1995, Paul Patton, who became governor, actually fought the election in 1995, I became so disgusted with the party and how the politics had let us down that I left the Democratic Party because the party left me. And so I ran as a Reform Party candidate in 1999 in the general election and got 15.3% of the vote. You know, next to Jesse Ventura and Ross Perot, that's the best any Reform Party candidate ever did anywhere in the country. And even the best any third party candidate has ever done in the state of Kentucky did it on a $20,000 budget. So again, it freaked them out.
Right.
But then my friend Ben Chandler ran for governor in 2003 in the Democratic primary, so I didn't run, but he would have brought some real deep changes to Kentucky. So that's when I ran for attorney general and got to earn 10,000 votes. But this time, Kentucky state government right now is dysfunctional. Both parties have played politics as a blood sport to where they're in absolute contentious gridlock.
Yeah.
They're not getting the business of the people done. Business the people is laid unattended while they get up there and get in a business moment contest with themselves.
And then, of course, the governor hired a bunch of his buddies and got him in, and that was a big scandal that happened.
The Democrats got so bad. I left the party in 95 and ran as an independent Reform Party. But the Democrats got so bad that in 2003, the state elected Republicans to replace them.
Right. And how many years had gone before?
36 years. Since they had a Republican administration.
Wow.
But the Democrats got so corrupt and so graft-ridden that they elected the Republicans to replace them. And immediately the Republicans went out and assumed the same position,
same thing.
So now in 2007, both parties are outraged and the people in the state of Kentucky are outraged. And they are ready for true fundamental change. And that's what my candidacy and the candidacy of my lieutenant governor candidate, Mark Wireman, mm-hmm. that's what we're offering to people in Kentucky. And you know, we don't have any real money to speak of. We are running in, we are tied right now to third place. We've already left three of the other candidates behind. And we spent $13,000 and they spent $500,000 in each, and we have already dusted them. We're already percentage points ahead of them, 5 percentage points ahead of them, and increasing the gap.
And you're like second in the polls just about everywhere, aren't you?
Second and third in the polls throughout the state.
Yeah.
And we've done it all. We've done it all on $13,000. Folks, let me tell you something. When we win this on a budget of probably less than $25,000, it's going to freak the hell out of everybody. Money is not going to be as important as it used to be. If you've got the message, and if you've got the hope and the strength and the focus to carry it on through. And so that's why I'm asking all our voters, all the folks who are watching here, you have until April 22nd to register to vote as a Democrat. When you see this, it'll probably be on that date. If you're not registered as a Democrat, go find a friend who is and make sure they go to vote. 80,000 votes makes every vote so very important. We've got a chance to get these rascals out and put in people like me who don't want to put you in jail over smoking marijuana. Who wants to get it into the hands of the sick and dying people of the state of Kentucky? Who understands that marijuana in the hands of sick and dying folks and sick folks will save the state billions of dollars in health care money? And put a smile on the face of some people going through chronic pain who hadn't smiled in years. Folks who will not smoke marijuana now because it is illegal, even though their sons and daughters smoke it. Even though they know people who get relief from it smoke it, they won't smoke it because it's illegal.
They're afraid.
Yeah, they're afraid. We've got to let them know that we care about them, that we're going to give them the relief that they need. And, you know, that's what my administration will do if I get to be governor of the state of Kentucky, among many other things. You know, I was 24 years old in Milkman when I decided I was going to go to college, become an attorney. And the folks who've read my autobiography know a little bit about that. And so that was in 1971. And I decided then, I was going to go to college, become an attorney, become governor, and take the government off the backs of the people. I've gotten up every day for the last 36 years to do that. and I'm just about to get them surrounded. I'm just about to get it done. I went to college, became an attorney. I think I'm going to win governor this time. I've been fighting for the people all this time.
Absolutely.
When I get to be governor, we're going to have a real jawbone of the ass with which we will slay many fascist Philistines.
Absolutely. Cut just for a minute. I want to do something real fast. And I'll pick up. Send them to the website, okay?
Let me segue right into it a bit.
Go ahead. Okay.
And you know, being a, I have run for various offices, and each one of them has been a lesson to learn in American politics. The first lesson I learned was that the media was going to boycott me, going to marginalize me, going to make me a one-issue candidate. They were going to ignore me to every extent they could. When they had to cover me and could not help it, it was always perennial pot candidate game with Galbraith.
Absolutely.
So, you know, now I start answering that and say, yeah, I'm a perennial candidate. Kentucky's got perennial problems. You know, if the first people who beat me in a race had fixed the problems, I wouldn't run again. But they didn't, and they haven't, and they won't.
Well, I remember in the 91 campaign, the Courier-Journal in Louisville was boycotting you. We did a big protest to force them to do their job and cover in the media his campaign.
And, of course, they didn't. They ignored me at that time. And,
absolutely.
And since that time, the Herald Leader's done the same thing.
Yeah.
So what I decided to do, and, of course, like in the Attorney General's race, I only got to 12 out of Kentucky's 120 counties. So what I've got to do is to find some way to get the word out to the rest of the counties. So in 2004, I wrote my autobiography, and I'll give the little folks, you're familiar with it, I'll give this to the folks who are looking. This is my autobiography. It's called The Last Free Man in America. Now, first of all, folks, that is a challenge more than it's a title. People say, how come Galbraith gets to call himself the last free man in America? Hey. If you can be more free than I am and exhibit it in a positive, uplifting fashion that will help other people achieve their own freedom, then by golly, do it, and you can have the title of the last free man in America.
Or the second last free
man. Or the second last free man in America. Or I'll be the second last free man in America, because you're exercising your freedom uplifts us all. So that's the title of it, and yes, that is a real M60 on the front of that cover. People say, Galbraith, why are you holding that M60 on front of your book? And I say, because I'm a serious man. And if that doesn't denote it, I don't know how else to denote it to you. The fact is that the lady, well, let me tell you a bit about the book first. We published it in 2004 as a self-published. It was the number one seller at Joseph F. Bookstore, the largest independent bookstore in America, for 10 straight weeks. Brereton Jones, an ex-governor of the state of Kentucky from 1993 up to 1997, I gave him a copy of it. He called me the next day and said, Galbraith, I took your book home last night to look at the pictures and ended up reading it, finishing it at 4 o'clock this morning. He said, it's the best statement of the democracy and the Democratic Party principles that I've ever read, and that I don't know whether you're going to win the primary for governor, but anybody who wins it ought to implement your policies for lifting Kentucky out of poverty and illiteracy. He said, everybody who votes in this race ought to read this book before they vote. And, you know, I was overwhelmed with that. 3 hours later, an 18-year-old girl from the middle of the mountains, Middlesboro, Kentucky, called me. Said, Mr. Galbraith, I read your book twice last week. I'd like you to get together with a group of me and my friends to talk about some things. And I was equally honored with that. And what's getting these folks, the commonality of folks that so widely depart, is the theme of my book. And that is that every generation must rewin its own freedom. It doesn't make any difference what sacrifices were made by people on your behalf anywhere in the world up until about a second ago. Because, you know, that just got us up to the last second. Our freedom depends on what you would want to do and what you know to do in the next second. And so this is a primer on citizenship. It's a primer on your individual rights, your citizens' rights. It's a primer on your constitutional rights. And on the constitutional form of government, on why it was set up, what it did for the human being, how it finally gave human beings on this planet worth and value and affirmation and acknowledgement, how it became a system of government that uplifted humankind all over the planet. And it's in grave peril right now. The American way of life, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which has given us the opportunity to grow this nation far beyond the imagination of anybody heretofore, is under attack right now by the people that I call the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, transnational, corporate, fascist, elite, SOBs. The people who are putting this free trade together, people who see the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as impediments to an implementation of a new world order in the global economy. They can't afford to give human rights and due process to every citizen on the planet. So instead, in order to make us all one world, they're going to try to take what makes us special away from us. America's under attack right now. Human beings are under attack right now. And my candidacy has always been to put human beings in front of the corporations. And this book has been a terrific asset to it. You can get this on Amazon.com. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go through Joseph Beth. They'll have copies of it. And it's been extremely well received everywhere.
Can they also find it on your website?
Yes, they can find it on my website at gatewood.com. It's being taught as political science class in two University of Kentucky political science classes. And it's being taught as English literature in two Henry Clay High School senior classes in Lexington. So,
that's wonderful.
So it's a fun book. I left out 100% of sex and 80% of drugs, but it's still fun.
You know, people don't understand. This is all about freedom. So I want to show this real quick, and I'd share this with you and let you have, I gave you one.
Yes,
I had
yes,
two
I still
copies
got it.
Yes. This is a 100% hemp flag, was made by, what was John Barenbeck's corporation or organization?
American Hemp Institute or something like that.
The Hemp Institute, I believe.
That's
it was.
Right.
I believe
Institute,
that's what
that's
it was.
Right.
That's out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. John Barenbeck donated 1,000 of these flags. They're 100% hemp. And you mentioned Brereton Jones,
yes,
who beat you in the 91 campaign and
that's
became
right.
governor. You know, you could probably explain better what the exemptions were on hemp prior to the Gatewood law that he, where he did the exemptions. I'm sure you could explain that better to the audience than I ever could.
When the federal government initiated the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act, it distinguished between hemp and marijuana. The farmers were upset. The American Medical Association was upset, too, but they got trumped. But the farmers didn't, and the birdseed manufacturers didn't. So hemp was denoted as exempt from the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act. And all the other states who were given the mandate to outlaw hemp went ahead and just copied the federal statute so that they were still distinguished in all states as hemp different from marijuana, the cannabis for smoking. And after I started running on the platform, started running on returning to hemp as a fiber and fuel and industrial crop, we had a legislator in Kentucky named Bill Lear, who engineered a change in the definition to where, under Kentucky law, hemp and marijuana were the same thing. But Brereton didn't have anything to do with that. What Brereton did do was he established a hemp commission to study hemp as a fiber crop, which I thought was fantastic. But he got hoodwinked into naming the chairman of that being the largest petrochemical, the chemical fertilizer in the entire agri market in Kentucky, became the head of it. Which was antithetical to the mission of the Hemp Commission. And neither did Brereton at the time. He didn't understand what it was.
I see.
But so he got hoodwinked on that. But here's what has happened. In the interim, I mean, people used to wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Here comes Galbraith, the marijuana guy. Here comes Pete Weed, you know.
Right.
And it was roundly derided. But another ex-governor, Louis Nunn, a Republican, who had the greatest asset, I think, is in anybody, and that's he remained educable up until the day of his death. You could teach Louis something. He had the kind of mind where he could unlearn the old lies and learn something new. And so he took, he always explained him to him, and he was outraged just like the rest of the young folks were. He was about 75, and he went up there to the legislature in the state of Kentucky, and he pushed through a pro-hemp bill. So the state of Kentucky passed it. He got five other governors to okay it. They all said Gatewood's right. Well, they didn't say Gatewood's right. As a matter of fact, that's the one thing they didn't say.
Yeah, Gatewood's
been right all along.
Right.
But they just said hemp is a crop, and we want to study it. University of Kentucky, here's a bill. We're giving you the right to grow the crop to study it. And so the University of Kentucky and the state of Kentucky have the legislation in place to study hemp as a cash crop, but the DEA will not give them the permit to grow the test crop.
Right.
And so the DEA is holding back fuel production on hemp, which is petroleum, by the way. And which if we get a chance, I'd like to inform your listeners about why hemp is a fuel and what that's all about. You know,
take a couple of minutes and do a quick overview.
Okay, but folks, get your mom and dad in here if they don't know why they've made this plant illegal. First of all, it's the number one medicine on earth. A prosecutor asked me the other day, Gatewood, why do people smoke marijuana? And I said, because it's the number one medicine for the number one killer on earth, which is stress. People who smoke marijuana live a year to a year and a half longer than people who don't because it helps you breathe and helps you think. and people find that relaxing. And so that's why they smoke marijuana. They feel comfortable with it, and they know it's not going to kill them. But, and so the pharmaceutical companies, I typify the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, yada, 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 folks, where you men go. But the pharmaceutical companies don't want you growing the number one medicine on earth in your own flower box. Marijuana was the basis of more than 60% of the patent medicines on this earth prior to its legalization, when the pharmaceutical companies took over the production and distribution of pharmaceutical medicines and made the farmers criminal if they tried to grow plants in competition with the synthetic stuff. But the other thing about it is the petrochemical companies. You know, right now, George Bush the other day in his State of the Union address talked about our addiction to foreign oil. The only two words he left out of there were Gatewood and hemp, because hemp is petroleum. Let's talk about the difference between hemp and marijuana. They're both of those are the cannabis plant. That's the scientific name for it, is cannabis. When you cultivate that plant in the production of smoking material where you want the medicinal and intoxicant properties of it, you cultivate it in one direction, and they call that marijuana. You take that same plant, you cultivate it in an industrial textile plant, you plant it differently, you cultivate it differently, you take it, you harvest it differently. They call that hemp. That's where industrial textile uses. Hemp, when grown in that manner, hemp is petroleum. That's what hemp is. If we planted 6% of U.S. agricultural land in hemp, we wouldn't have to import another drop of oil. You think the petrochemical companies are going to spend millions and billions of dollars and outlaw millions and millions of people who would associate with a green natural plant like that? You bet they would. Here's how it's petroleum. All petroleum is liquefied vegetative matter that was grown eons ago and trapped and stored the sun's energy through its photosynthetic process. And then it was set aside by nature and put through some sort of geological liquefaction process into petroleum, or compacted dry into coal and peat. And what we're running around on our cars right now is the sun's energy that was trapped and stored in that growing biomass thousands and thousands of years ago. Well, hemp, cannabis, is the most efficient photosynthesizing biomass on the planet. That means it more readily traps and stores the sun's energy through its growth process. So it is by far and away the superior plant to convert into wood alcohol, methanol. George Bush said in 1989 that methanol is the fuel of the future, and it is. It's far more effective and efficient than ethanol. With ethanol, which is corn, you need flat land, pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers to grow it. And you're taking away land for foodstuffs, and you're driving up the cost of food, and there's poor Mexicans now in Mexico can't even afford the cost of corn for tortillas because of ethanol. But methanol, hemp, is the primary fuel on the planet, and it has a secondary fuel source. When you talk about converting it into methanol, you're talking about the plants, the leaves, everything, the roots and everything like that. You put it in, you convert it on down.
Now, what runs on methanol, though? That's the question.
Anything runs on gasoline. That's our gasoline. It's wood alcohol.
So for instance, I have a new vehicle called the Green Machine.
Yes.
I have a 98 Grand Voyager Plymouth that is considered what's a flex fuel. And what that means is it can run on either ethanol or gasoline or any mixture of. And one of the main reasons why I decided to buy this vehicle was because I know that it can run on hemp methanol. And although right now all we have is corn, unfortunately, I believe that eventually the corn people that are making the ethanol are going to realize that the superior plant that they should be growing is hemp, and that eventually my Green Machine can run on the real stuff, the better stuff, which is the hemp.
I gave a speech in 1993 to the Kentucky Press Association where I pointed out that Volkswagen and Mercedes in Germany had already created cars that would run off a combination of any alcohol or fuel that we put into them.
Exactly.
And they had already converted billions of dollars in investments over these flex fuel kinds of situations. And we're talking about wood alcohol, methanol, which is, we're running in. That's what they burn at racetracks.
Exactly.
Okay. But then there's a second fuel source that people don't know about, and that is the hemp seed. And of course, the corn doesn't have this. The hemp seed, all those little marijuana seeds that you see, the hemp cannabis seeds, every one of them is a little oil capsule. 35 to 40% oil by weight. So if I have 100 pounds of hemp seed over here, then that's 35 to 40 pounds of the premier motor lubricating oil in the planet. They used it in World War II. They grew a hemp in Kentucky and used the seed and oil out of it to lubricate the high altitude aircraft in World War II because of its constant viscosity, the premier motor lubricating oil in the planet. you can take that same oil and do what Reverend Nelson and I did in 1991 and pour it into the gas tank on your diesel engines. Rudolph Diesel originally manufactured diesel engines to run off seed oil before the petroleum companies got it and bastardized the process. And those diesel engines will run now off seed oil, corn seed oil, soybean oil, peanut oil, and hemp oil, which is superior to all of them. Willie Nelson and I poured it into my Mercedes diesel in 1991 and drove across the state of Kentucky as part of my race for governor. It was the first time a vehicle had operated on the streets of America on hemp oil in 70 years. Mm-hmm. And I saw Willie here not too long ago, and he said, "Gatewood, I'll never forget that day. That's why I started my own biofuel company now.
Yeah.
All my buses and all my tour buses run off biofuels because I learned from you on that day." And so you also take that oil and you can pour it into your wok and stir fry your vegetables with it, and it's the most nutritious food you can put in your body.
Well, I'll tell you what, you continue talking about that. I'm going to step off camera for a minute, and I'm going to get a prop, and we'll show people what hemp oil is.
Oh, there you go. That's
talk about a few more uses, and I'll be right back on camera in a second.
I got to confess, I've already told you more than I know. You know, Kentucky was the world's largest producer of hemp for over 100 years, and that's how I became involved in this situation. Kentucky, when it grew hemp, had produced 4 vice presidents of the United States. We were a leader in economics and banking and intelligence and politics. And over my lifetime, and just before my lifetime, through the Depression, Kentucky became a very poor state because we stopped raising hemp. We were the world's largest producer up until 1911. And it was our largest cash crop for over 100 years. So all the old-time farms, the 4, 5, 5, 6 generation farms in Kentucky, were bought with the proceeds from hemp. So when I made up my mind, I was 24 years old and a milkman, and I decided to go to college, become an attorney, become governor, and lift Kentucky out of poverty. I began looking at what one major revenue source might the state of Kentucky find that would spread the wealth throughout the entire state, that would be egalitarian, and it would uplift both Democrats and Republicans, uplift everybody. And I decided regaining hemp as a cash crop, both its industrial textile and its medicinal intoxicant properties, would give a lot of new money into the state of Kentucky, would bring a lot of new revenue into the tax base. It would allow our family farmers to stay on the farm, and it would take that market out of the black market and put it in the hands of people who need it, who want it, and who are willing to pay a little tax on it so we can do it right by our educational health care system in the state. And that's why I've championed the cause. That plus the fact that he cured my asthma. I've had asthma all my life. I was 19 years old when I went to the Marines and got discharged with asthma from Paris Island after 5 weeks on the island. I was 19 years old. I'd never smoked marijuana. I didn't know it cured asthma. I was 21. A friend of mine who later became a doctor said, "Gatewood, says I smoke this, it'll help you." I smoked it, cured my asthma like that. Hadn't had anything close to an asthma attack since that time. That was 39 years ago. And, I'm the owner of both the industrial textile and medicinal properties.
Well, on the industrial, of course, this is the Nature's Way brand. There's a few different brands. Now, this, of course, the only difference between this and what you're talking about the regular industrial, is that in Canada, where this is being grown, their laws have set it to where it has to have low THC, and it is genetically, I don't know if it's genetically modified. I don't know if you might be able to explain that, but it is a slight different in bringing its THC level down. They're afraid that pot smokers are going to go try to get their hemp. So, but this is taken from the seeds. They take the seeds out of the shell, the hulled seed, and they crush it and simply have the oil come out of it. Now, left out of that would be hemp flour and a hemp protein powder that you can use in your food and stuff. But I use this in salads. You can see that's green, I hope. I use this in smoothies and many other things. And as Gatewood pointed out, you can run it in your diesel engine as well. I've seen it done. 1991 Gatewood stock, the concert that was for that campaign. You guys had a diesel engine in the back end of a truck sitting in front of the stage, and I sat there and watched it run on this, folks.
The 40 horsepower freestanding diesel.
Absolutely.
Out there.
Absolutely.
A piece of flyboard, a clear gas, a gas tank, clear gas tube, and full pimple and sat there and went chugga 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 all day long.
Absolutely. So yeah, you can eat this, you can also run it in your car or your diesel truck. So for health, of course, if you're going to put it on your salad, you know, the most things that people need to understand that this is the superior protein, the superior omegas to any other plant, including soy. Soy is higher protein, milk is higher protein, But this is the most easiest digested protein that you can get. And it is the balanced omegas. You know, there's the big thing out now. You got to get your omegas. Get that fish oil. Well, let's save the fish and use hemp oil. That's what I say. Because it's much better than the fish oil.
It also has the 8 essential amino acids necessary for human growth and development. And it's the number one source for linoleic and linoleic acids, which cut your cholesterol and plaque. And the number one source for retistin, which boosts your immunological system.
Exactly.
And the thing about it is that it is natural. It's not going to kill you. It won't toxify you.
And it won't get you high.
And it won't get you high. That's what gruel was. Gruel, the whole civilization has subsisted on gruel in times of famine. It's hemp seed and water, because it is the complete source if you had to exist on one thing, hemp seed is good for.
And that's what China was eating before rice, correct?
That, to my knowledge, that's a little bit before my time.
Yeah, well, my time as well. I want to touch real quick on, you know, a lot of people, you know, heard your early days, and because, as you pointed out, the media made you the marijuana candidate. A lot of people think that that's always only been your goal, and then as soon as the medical aspect was pushed more, a lot of people thought you abandoned them because they weren't medical patients. You and I both know and agree that any use of cannabis, especially for stress-related, is medicine. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that ask that question of me. So what happened? He doesn't care about the recreational people anymore. And I explained to them that it isn't about recreation. It isn't about whether or not you think you're using it medically or you don't know you're using it medically. It's about the freedoms. I want to touch on the Alaska stuff and how you compare that to Kentucky law and what your stance is on this, to tell people that you haven't abandoned them, but that is not what your campaign is focusing on, but that you still believe in freedoms.
Well, first of all, let me say this. If those people who are listening, who are saying this, watching this right now, well, unless you vote, I almost don't care what you think.
Right.
You know? If you're sitting on your ass and you're not out there part of the political process and making some sacrifice to get a change through some effort on your part, I really don't give a damn what you think. Now, if you can't vote because you've been arrested, you've been victimized by this system, I understand. You know? But if you're just a lazy jerk out there talking, you know, I don't give a damn. Now, for you folks who are asking that question legitimately, let me explain. I put about $1 million into this program. I've been at it for 36 years. I've devoted my whole life to it. Devoted my whole law practice to it. So I have a pretty good idea about what I'm doing. I have a pretty good idea of what it's going to take to get the actual change here. And it's not standing out there burying my ass every chance I get. And I'm not going to do it. When I do that, when I used to do that, the media absolutely blanked us out. No wonder we can't get any changes. If we go out there and act like that, they're not going to change for us. So if you want to know how I feel about it, I invite you to take a look at my book right here. I got a chapter in this book entitled, I Declare Marijuana Legal in Kentucky. I got a chapter, I Declare Marijuana Legal in Kentucky. I was running for Attorney General. And part of my plank was I declared marijuana legal in Kentucky. Anybody can smoke marijuana in Kentucky and they can't be arrested for it. I stood up and said in front of the Supreme Court, stood up and said in front of the Court of Appeals, the University of Louisville Law School, you know, what the hell have you done? You know, oh, I'm sorry, I got back into those people who aren't trying to be very solid. But in any case, you had the right to smoke marijuana in Kentucky. It's legal. Let me tell you a little story. In this race for Attorney General, I was an independent. And I was running against a Democrat and Republican in the November election in 2003. And so we had a debate in front of the University of Louisville Law School. And there were 500 people there. And there were Supreme Court judges, Court of Appeal judges, District Court, Circuit Court judges, prosecutors, law professors, law students, cops, all those things there. And so the first word out of the analyst's mouth was, Mr. Galbraith, you smoke marijuana? And I said, every day. I said, every day? How can you break the law like that every day and still want to be the top cop in the state of Kentucky? I said, I'm not breaking the law by smoking marijuana in the state of Kentucky. She said, what do you mean? And I said, well, you're a law student. Listen to me. In 1909, the Kentucky legislature passed a law that said the possession of alcohol anywhere in the state of Kentucky was illegal. And, of course, that was challenged in 1909 in Commonwealth versus Campbell. And in 1915 in Commonwealth versus Smith, Kentucky's highest court said that Kentuckians have a right to privacy in their home, to which the power of the police does not extend as long as that person is not being injurious to anybody else. The court didn't say, hey, you have a right to alcohol in your home. They said, you have a right to constitutional privacy, to be left alone as long as you're not injuring anybody else. And that's the present operative law in Kentucky today. Out of 120 counties, 77 of them are dry. And the reason that the state police don't go down there and kick down their doors and go in and haul them off, hold them in a cage for ransom, is because of that right to privacy. Now, with marijuana, I have a substance matter that's demonstrably less injurious than alcohol is. A substance matter with which I cannot injure anybody else. And so I demand the same constitutional right to privacy in my home as those people who have alcohol have in their home. And, you know, there's not a judge in this room, I say, that's going to sign a warrant to come in there and take any of my 4 plants and 8 ounces I have in my home right now. I was lying about the plant. I just like to give my dad's name. I have marijuana there and have today. You know, I said, they're not going to sign a warrant to come into my home because they know I have that same constitutional right. I said, do you have any problem? You understand now? You have any more questions? And nobody said a word. And then Greg Stumbo, who was the Democratic nominee and who later won the election, jumps up and starts doing a little dance around. He says, Gaywood, he says, I don't know how you got your judiciary buffaloed in your jurisdiction, but by God, when I become Attorney General, that's going to change. So in my book, I write about that. And at the end of it, I said, well, Greg, you are an Attorney General, and I'm still waiting. You know? So you ask me how I feel about it. Are you questioning me how I feel about it after 35 years out here trying to break the ground I'm breaking? Read my book. You'll find out how I feel about it.
Yeah, I agree because, you know, I've known you this long now, since 91, and I've never seen you change anything that you say. It's the media portrayal is what I've seen, and you've always stood by the personal choice, the personal right issue.
When they say legalize, you're not saying legalize anymore. Look, right. Tomatoes are legal.
Right.
Alcohol and tobacco is licensed and regulated. I don't want 80-year-olds standing on the street corner smoking pot. They can stand on the street corner and eat a tomato, you know? I don't want Friday night sales. I don't want clearance sales. I don't want corporations making profits off of it. I don't want people advertising it because they want to increase their profit motive. I don't want any of that. I want people to either grow their own in the privacy of their own abode or privilege their own home. I want them to take care of their family needs. If they want to trade around with a friend, that's fine. But I don't want to see anybody commercing in it unless we have a lot of people who are too sick to give their own. Which California's trying it with a caregiver program where somebody else can grow their platform. I think that's probably the way to do it. I don't want to see any profit motive in it. I don't want to see people encouraged to smoke it. I do encourage some folks if they're down, if they're bad, if they're feeling bad. So I'm like, yeah, you know, try marijuana as medicine.
Absolutely.
But I don't say, hey, you know, go smoke as much pot as you can. You know, it's good for you. It's, you know, some people it would be, but I don't just tell everybody that. That's not what I meant for.
And you know, and if it's being used medically, it's a self-medication thing. It's like some pharmaceutical bottles say, take as needed. Maybe you only need it once a week. And that's a choice, and that's what should be between you and your doctor.
Well, the beautiful part about it is that you can't OD on it, you know, if you do smoke too much, it's not going to kill you.
Yeah. You might go to sleep for a few hours.
It gets a little boring after a while.
Yeah.
Hey, I've tried to kill myself on marijuana.
Now, unless a ton of it falls on you or you're hung by a hemp noose or the cops shoot you as you're running away, other than that, it won't hurt you. Well, give us 5 minutes on something besides this, about what you're campaigning, to make sure that people understand that you aren't just this issue, whether it's the recreational, the medical, the industrial side, or the freedom issues. For Kentucky, what can you do running for governor, if you become governor in Kentucky, separate from all of this, that you can do to bring Kentucky in a better state than it is in right now?
Kentucky is a very poor state. In the last 7 years, we've gone from being 10th poorest state to the 6th poorest state. In the last 7 years, we've dropped $2,100 in median income. Our manufacturing base has been decimated. Our middle class has been decimated by free trade. All the manufacturing jobs have gone overseas. We haven't had anything to replace them. We've lost the tobacco crop. Tobacco is no longer in the hands of 100,000 farmers. It's maybe in the hands of 20,000 or 30,000 farmers. We've paralyzed entire portions of eastern Kentucky with pharmaceutical medicines, OxyContin, Morset, Lortab. Our jails are overflowing. Our prison systems are overflowing. Our morgues are overflowing. We went from 5,000 OD deaths in 3 years ago to 11,000 ODs. ODs, not deaths, ODs were reported to the emergency room. We've got counties down there that have 65 and 70 OD deaths a year. I think we probably had a couple thousand OD deaths last year. It's an epidemic. And, you know, people are saying, you know, what's the answer? Well, Kentucky politicians, both political parties, have been playing politics as a blood sport while the business and the people lays unattended in the dust. Corruption has kept the state poor, payoffs to special interests to elect puppets through the office. The office has been bought and sold by millionaires in the past. Nobody's really tried to find out whether the system of the American form of constitutional government actually works to the benefit of the people anymore. So we've got what we call the Office of Economic Development. It's the one that tries to attract jobs into the state by offering incentives like land, buildings and money. And they're attracting a lot of $6 and $7 an hour jobs in there, but the $10, $12, and $15, and $20 an hour jobs won't come in because we're illiterate, we're untrainable. Okay. At the same time, in 1991, we spent 68% of the state budget on education. This year, we're spending 60% of the state budget on education. So we're defunding systematically the apparatus necessary to educate us beyond $6 and $7 an hour jobs. Mm-hmm. That's not surprising because Gene Strong, head of the Council for Economic Development, who's been in charge of all these economic incentives, said in 1994 that he had a plan for every Kentuckian. By the year 2012, 80% of Kentucky is going to be earning $8 an hour. Well, there's a lot of us who've been trying mightily to take Kentucky in another scenario than that. Here, we've been working very hard, and a lot of well-meaning people who don't agree with me on a lot of issues been trying hard to lift Kentucky out of poverty. But our official state policy on economic incentives has been to invite in $6 and $7 an hour jobs. So what I want to do is I want to refund education. I want to try to get us out of $7, $8 an hour kind of situation. And I want to give our kids some hopes. So what I want to do is, without raising taxes, I got a plan A and a plan B. What can we do without raising taxes or any revenue stream? And what happens if, say, we invite gambling into the state? Under plan A, we can give every high school graduate in the state of Kentucky a $5,000 voucher for books, tuition, and fees to any institution of further learning within the state of Kentucky. It's time to talk about further learning instead of higher learning. It's time to, our C&D students need to be trained into employability too. And, they deserve to be trained in education. And so this $5,000 voucher is not for book, it's just for books, tuition, and fees. It's not for creature comfort. It's not for pizza, rent, and beer. It's not no cash bank account, and no cash ever hits a student's hands. It's just when our high school graduate decides they want to go get trained or educated into employability within the state of Kentucky, the state will cut a check to the people who are going to train them in employability. Whether it be electronic school, vocational school, UK, UL, a truck driving school, cosmetology school. We've got to give all our kids hope for something after high school, not just the A and B students, because there's got a lot of poor counties in the state of Kentucky. There aren't 20 counties, 8 of them, or just 80 of them, are just really poor. And we've got to give those kids in the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grades a window of opportunity to come out of high school, to make something of themselves, to see something of the world. Otherwise, they're going to remain C&D students. I think we give them a little hope and a little incentive. I think that they will probably start trying in school. They won't give up. They know that they're going to get a recharge in their educational battery when they get out of high school. And I think we can strengthen K through 12 because they will have an incentive to stay in and master those kinds of subject matters. And we've got graduating kids right now can't make change for a $10 bill in there yet. We've got to change that. But the really other beautiful part is that ought to invite in some cutting-edge technology training schools into the state. Because every time there's an emerging industrial sector where workers need to be trained, they know they can come to Kentucky, and we will pay them to train our workers and become workers in that thing. So I think we've got to give our kids incentive, got to give them hope, got to give them a little vision. And I think that right now 53% of the people we graduate from high school have to have some form of remedial education before they're college qualified. I think we ought to take that money, we ought to start initiating remedial education in the first grade to make up for what they didn't learn in kindergarten and preschool.
Right, because that is a major problem in Kentucky, the literacy.
Absolutely. Yeah. The second thing is that I want to give economic incentives to existing in-state corporations to establish state-of-the-art environmental compliance around their operations. We've got DuPont down there putting a vast hazardous material out within the neighborhoods. We've got mountaintop removal where they're knocking off streams. Let's give them some economic incentives to be particularly sensitive to the environmental impact they have, environmental impact plans, and we will reduce their tax burden if they pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
You get a lot more cooperation with honey than you do vinegar. Absolutely. The third thing that's not going to cost us any money is I want to make the pharmaceutical companies come in and put up about $500 million for drug treatment programs in the state of Kentucky.
Well, they've helped create the addiction process.
They
even helped create the meth addiction rate. as far as I'm concerned.
There's an entire portion of Eastern Kentucky that's totally paralyzed with that crap.
Yeah.
For less than a penny a tablet, they could have created OxyContin so you can't crush it up and snort it.
Right.
And that wasn't for the extra penny profit per tablet. That was to create the addictive black market. And what I'd like to do is, right now, we, the taxpayer, a very poor state in the state of Kentucky, are putting out tens and hundreds of millions of dollars for the overflowing jails and prison systems and court dockets and probation and parole offices and morgues and emergency rooms, ODs, and you can't get effective drug treatment in. And our jails are overflowing. The jails are busting the county budgets.
And they want to build another one here in Northern Kentucky that we're opposed to.
Yeah. You know, so what I want to do is I want to force the tobacco companies to come in and put up money to deal with the impact of their poisons on this society. Mm-hmm. And I think the pharmaceutical companies are certainly not sacrosanct, although you would think some of the officials think they are. I think they're heavily invested in is what I think.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I want to make them force them, sue them if we have to, just like we sue the tobacco companies. They can come in here, put up about $500 million in drug treatment programs, because I'm damn tired of using our tax dollar, which should be going into our healthcare systems, which should be going into our law enforcement systems, having to come up here and deal with their poisons that they're putting out as quick as they can.
Absolutely.
Now, one other thing.
Go ahead.
Now, that's Plan A. We don't have to raise taxes one bit. Plan B. Everybody in the race is calling for casino gambling to come into the state of Kentucky. You know, we've got river boats and casinos on the other side of the river in Kentucky. We don't have those, and we're losing quite a bit of money to the gambling facilities. The tax dollars they're collecting are paving the roads in Indiana and educating Indiana and West Virginia schools. So there's been a real push on to put the question of casino gaming on the ballot in Kentucky. And so I'm in favor of putting it on the ballot. How I would vote for that, I don't know. I've only been in both places twice. You know, wanted to see my friend Wood Nelson play. But if the people don't vote it in, I've told you my program for lifting Kentucky out of poverty and illiteracy. And if they do vote it in, then the other folks, and I agreed, has to go to the racetracks. We've got to give the racetracks to the management and casinos, because if they cannot come in and break the racetracks, there's only one function of a thoroughbred horse, has to run around a track fast. If they don't have the racetracks, then we don't have the breeding industry in the state of Kentucky. We absolutely need to protect the breeding industry.
Absolutely.
But what sets me apart from the other candidates is they're talking about $400 or $500 million to bring in and apply to Kentucky's chronic underfunded needs in health care and employee retirement and Medicaid. $400 or $500 million isn't really going to do it. What I propose, instead of $400 or $500 million and letting the profits go to the Atlantic City or Las Vegas crowd, I propose that the state own the casino. It's like the Indians own their own casino.
Absolutely.
So that instead of just getting $400 or $500 million and letting the other $1.5 billion go to other people, let the state take the entire $1.5 to $2 billion, which are profits off that, give the racetracks and other population centers a management contract, and say, yeah, we'll make it economically viable all the time. We have the biggest horse race purses in the world. We'll make sure that you're a going concern all the time. But if you can't control the gambling and the loan sharking, we're going to pull your management contract from you and give it to somebody who can. Instead of just applying a Band-Aid of $400 or $500 million on Kentucky's chronic problems, we're going to have $1.5 to $2 billion to do it. You know, and we're going to finally solve Kentucky's chronic poverty problem. So that's my program. It's been very well received all around the state.
Wonderful. Of course, last but not least, I definitely want you to tell us who your running mate is, Mark Wireman. I've not had the opportunity to meet him. So tell us about Mark.
Kentucky requires that you have a running mate, a lieutenant governor running mate. You run as a slate. I was looking at casting about for my running mate this time, and I've had a couple of real beauties in the past. But you know, and I kept getting frustrated because I kept talking to people that didn't really fit the bill. And then I decided I was talking to politicians. That was the problem. Hell, they are the problem.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to cast about for a citizen statesman. And I did, and by golly, I ran across one from Eastern Kentucky named Mark Wireman. He is absolutely the quintessential Eastern Kentucky gentleman. He was with the Highway Department for 27 years, comes from a good family. Highway Department for 27 years as an engineer. He plays a bluegrass gospel mandolin and a band up around the churches and bluegrass festivals around the state.
That's very cool.
And he got the two programs noted twice on KET on Tim Farmer's Kentucky Afield as a hunter and fisherman. Mm-hmm. And so he's extremely well-rounded, sharp, smart, and he's got a little beard, so we're going after the bearded folk in this state.
That's wonderful. Well, on a personal note, you're about to be a grandfather, correct?
Thank you for mentioning it. I have three gorgeous daughters,
absolutely,
as you know.
Yes, they are.
I couldn't be happier as a dad. My middle daughter, Abby, found out she was pregnant about 10 weeks ago, so this will be my first grandchild.
And wonderful.
I'm just tickled to death.
And which girls are going to be an attorney?
Abby.
Abby's going to be an attorney as well. Yes, wonderful. Well, that's keeping it in the family, of course.
Let me say one more little thing about the book. You can get this book at Joseph Beth and at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon.com, or you can go to Gatewood.com. Brereton Jones, the ex-governor of the state of Kentucky, said that it was the best statement of the Democratic Party of principles that he's ever read. On the same day that an 18-year-old girl from Middlesbrough in the middle of the mountains called me and said she had read it twice the previous week, wanted me to get together a group of her and her friends to talk about some things. So I was extremely gratified with that spectrum of people. You would like this book too. If you get a chance, pick one up and, get out there and you be the last free person in America, and I'll applaud your efforts.
Absolutely. Well, Gatewood, I definitely want to thank you for joining us here on Hemp Rock TV. It's always a pleasure, and I want to, if we get to, before the May 22nd date, get an update on what's going on with the campaign. Of course, you know, we can't tell people to go out and vote for Gatewood, but we definitely encourage you to get registered, be a part of the process, do what you think is best for the state of Kentucky.
Well, let me say something right
here. Go right ahead.
You know, I've been at this game now for about 30 years. And I have watched you for the last, 15, 18 years?
Since about 1991.
Yeah.
16 years.
I mean, you are a real asset to this part of the state. You're a real asset.
You're
a real asset to the state of Kentucky and to Cincinnati.
I appreciate that.
And you've been out there. I've seen you put your butt on the line time and again. I've seen you go out there with totally out of your own pocket and totally out of your own head and totally out of your own efforts to get out there and get the job done, speak up and help ask the people.
Well, I learned it from you.
And you've done things like, I've been able to utilize the media and utilize other assets that other people wouldn't think about utilizing. You put out a message of courage and freedom. And, I'd like to give you your due now because
I know you
really don't get it.
You have no idea how much I appreciate it.
Well, that's all right, dear. You're a real hero of mine, dear.
And you're my hero as well. You and Jack Hare. Got to give a plug for Jack Hare.
Bless Jack Hare.
The two of you are definitely. And just a very quick, brief overview. I saw Gatewood on Inside Edition program back in the week of October 20th in 1990. And I'd heard about the hemp rally that was coming that following weekend and was wanting to get involved as a pot activist, and then saw Gatewood on Inside Edition touting the Hempmobile with Willie Nelson and kicking off that 1991 campaign. And I was like, I can't vote for the guy because I live in Cincinnati, but I'm going to help him. And here we are, like 2007 now. And so you've definitely inspired me.
Thank you for that.
And you've enabled me to do what I do because you opened the door for me to learn what I know how to do and helped me start Hemp Rock Productions, which led to this program. And a matter of fact, one of our first productions in 1992 was the second Gatewood stop in 1992.
Fun, and that was wonderful. We've had a lot of fun over
the years. Absolutely, we have. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was one of the most fun I've ever had in this movement. And I can say that there's a lot of ups and downs, and sometimes, you know, we want to quit just because we are out there pushing ourselves, but you are one of my inspirations, Gatewood.
Thank you.
I want everybody to know that. So as I said, I can't really say go vote for him because this is public access, but if I lived in Kentucky, I know who I would be voting for.
Well, you can tell them, go to Gatewood.com and find out why you feel that way. Can't
absolutely.
Gatewood.com.
Absolutely. And while you're doing that, of course, you can go to HempRock.com and check out Hemp Rock Radio. We're going to be having you on that as well. And you can contact both of us either way. Don't forget, folks, May 5th here in Cincinnati, Ohio, on the Hamilton County Courthouse steps from 3:30 to 5:30 is the Global Marijuana March. And we want everybody to be there. Bring your signs. There's a prize for the best sign. We're going to march to the Hamilton County Justice Center following to protest the release of marijuana prisoners. And that's something we'll touch on in another segment of Hemp Rock TV, a new law that has been put on the books in Cincinnati that unfortunately is like Kentucky now, Gatewood, and they can arrest people in Cincinnati for marijuana possession. And we'll be talking about that sometime in the future, of course. Again, Gatewood, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And, I'll be there for the party on May 27th.
Non-illegitimate carborundum, folks. Don't let the bastards grind you down.
Absolutely. And thank you. I'm the Happy Hemptress, and I want to thank my crew, of course, with Hemp Rock TV from the Kentucky Marijuana Party, and we'll see you on the next segment.
You've been listening to Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress, voice of the resistance. The preceding interview with Kentucky's gubernatorial candidate, Gatewood Galbraith, was recorded on 4/20/07 for Hemp Rock TV's public access program. Remember, if you are registered as a Democrat in Kentucky, please vote for Gatewood this May 22nd in the Democratic primaries in Kentucky. Check Gatewood out at www.gatewood.com. Again, that's gatewood.com. Don't forget, if you live in Northern Kentucky and have Insight Cable, catch Hemp Rock TV on Public Access Channel 21. Hemp Rock would like to thank everyone who supported this year's Cincinnati Global Marijuana March on May 5th, including our sponsors, Hustler Hollywood, DetoxForLess.com, and Cincinnati's Hemptations. Stay tuned for more new Hemp Rock radio shows with the Happy Hemptress, Colonel Cannabis, and others. Keep up with Hemp Rock here on the web at HempRock.com or call the Hemp Rock Hemp Line at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP. Hemp Rock Radio is a Hemp Rock production and a member of the WEED Radio Network. Thanks for listening to Hemp Rock Radio on HempRock.com.